This is Arts Alive for this Saturday, June 3rd. I'm Brian Lauritsen. On the program today, from songs in school to the national anthem at sporting events, everyone has experienced singing alongside others. One LA choir is looking for new ways to introduce Angelenos to the magic of communal choral music making.
There's something special about choral singing when we bring our voices together. And that sound just fills the air. There's such a sense of power. I think choral singing is love.
Sue Fink is the founding artistic director and the conductor of the Angel City Chorale. She talks about the choir's upcoming concert called Interactive, an Imaginative Multidimensional Event, later on today's program. Plus, Vijay Iyer is a jazz pianist, a composer, a bandleader, a producer, an electronic musician, a writer, a genius, and this year's music director of the Ojai Music Festival. Hear what Iyer has planned for a very experimental Ojai in a bit. We'll also take you around town with the arts calendar, and on Ask the Dean, can a composer's creative process help inventors in other fields? Dean Rob Curiera of the USC Thornton School of Music and the Gloria Kaufman School of Dance investigates. First, here's Alan Chapman with the Arts News.
From the Arts Desk today, sad news about Belolavec and new leadership in Pasadena. Czech conductor Jiří Belolavec, who came to international acclaim as the leader of the BBC Symphony, has passed on after a long illness. Belolavec was born in Prague in 1946. He was known as a leading interpreter of Czech music by composers like Dvořák, Smetana, and Martinu. He led several Czech orchestras, including the Czech Philharmonic, through the 1970s, 80s, and early 90s. In 1995, he became chief guest conductor of the BBC Symphony, and then in 2006, he was named chief conductor. 2012, Belolavec was awarded an honorary CBE for services to music, and he continued to work with the BBC Orchestra as its conductor laureate. In a statement, a BBC representative said that Belolavec charmed audiences with the warm humanity he brought to the music he gave us. A Pasadena native now helms the Pasadena Museum of California Art. Susanna Smith Bautista is the museum's new executive director. She previously worked at the USC Pacific Asia Museum, the Museum of Contemporary Art, and the USC Fisher Museum of Art, and as the editorial director of LatinArt.com. She's also the author of a book called Museums in the Digital Age. The museum's board chairman said that her specialized focus on museum studies, digital technology, Latino, Chicano, and Asian art will ensure that their programming will represent the diverse scope of California art as well as modern media communication. That's the Arts News for Saturday, June 3rd. On this date in 1906, entertainer Josephine Baker was born in St. Louis, Missouri. She sailed to Paris in 1925 to advance her career and eventually became a French national. Ernest Hemingway called her the most sensational woman anyone ever saw. Baker made a name for herself as a dancer, but she also worked for the resistance during the Second World War, collecting information at parties and passing it along to French military intelligence. Once she snuck information to England about airfields, harbors, and German troop movements in notes written in invisible ink on her sheet music. For Arts Alive, I'm Alan Chapman.
This is Arts Alive on Classical KUSC. I'm Brian Lauritsen. Vijay Iyer is an American pianist, composer, bandleader, producer, electronic musician, and writer. He's a winner of the MacArthur Fellowship, the so-called Genius Award, and he's this year's music director for the Ojai Music Festival, which runs from June 8th to the 11th in the majestic town of Ojai. I sat down with Vijay Iyer to talk about his musical philosophy and his plans for this year's festival. When were you first contacted about being the music director for the Ojai Music Festival?
I think it was about 2 years ago. I was doing a residency at the Stone in New York City, and I'd been hearing about Ojai from Steve Schick and Claire Chase, the folks associated with ICE, and that was the year that Steve was going to be the music director, and he was actually working with me. We were doing some of the material that we'll be doing at Ojai, we were performing live. We did it at Brooklyn Academy of Music. We did it at UCLA and in D.C. And he was conducting ICE, and I was performing this film score, Radhe Radhe. And I think it was probably sometime in that period that I have a feeling, I don't know this for sure, but I think Steve Schick put the idea in Tom Morris's head that maybe you should check this guy out. So
didn't take Tom Morris long.
Well, he swooped in, you know, so then like it was just in January of 15 that he showed up and wanted to meet and basically popped the question. I thought he was crazy, but I also thought that this was an opportunity that I couldn't pass up. I mean, it's really a special challenge to try to rise to, you know. And I was trying to wrap my head around it, the scale of it, and what my role could possibly be stepping into those shoes and into that stream of history. I mean, it's such a significant festival in the U.S., you know, and in the world. And so I didn't take it lightly, but I also wanted to seize the opportunity, you know.
Tom Morris, he likes to say a tradition of breaking tradition.
Yes, yeah, yeah. It's clearly been part of the vanguard. And so, you know, maybe now that we're pretty deep into the 21st century, we can rethink what that even means and not let it harden into one ethos, but actually embrace transformation. That seems to be what he's about, and that's what I'm about, too. As an artist, you know, I'm not interested in standing still.
Yeah, and especially in recent years at the festival, it's become a more open and inclusive place for not just contemporary classical music. It has become Steve Schick definitely had a hand in opening things last year with Peter Sellers.
Yes.
Who, among other things, you know, really poked the festival and said, you know, we're going to do all, except for one composer, all of the composers on the festival are women. You know, and there was a lot of straight up non-classical music on Peter Sellers' festival last year. And, you know, breaking news, everyone was fine.
Yes.
No one was injured.
Right. Like, yeah. One thing that I've been trying to remind myself and remind others is that this thing that we call genre is a bit of a fiction.
And beyond music
as
well. I feel like right now we're in a moment where we're really sort of trying to genre-fy people, too.
Exactly. And well, that's where it comes from, to be honest. I mean, you know, the record company notion of genre is actually, it starts as racial categorization. That's where it came from, you know. It was never anything else. So most of the artists who I've collaborated with, including many elder African-American musicians, have rejected these labels because they're basically racial tags that serve to delimit an artist's mobility. And so that's kind of the community that I find myself a part of, is people who assert mobility and build community through musical acts.
It's something that we should be better at in America than we are, I think. The idea of just, you know, being omnivorous with how we consume whatever the art is. But since we're talking about music, you know, music from anywhere, and being sort of sponges about it, you know. But in the challenges that we're facing right now, whether it's politically or whether it's you know, human rights, whether it's how we treat people who are different from ourselves, you know, it's so amazing to just sort of look to music, look to art as a guiding light in these moments.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think of music as how we became civilized. It's really our human capacity for sounding together and for listening to each other and coordinating our actions. Basically all these things that make up what we call music, those are also what make up what we call civilization. I mean, the fact that we can do anything together starts with music. It starts with our capacity to move together and listen together, you know, and hear each other. So that's, these aren't metaphors, you know, that's really just a simple fact about us as a species, which music puts us right in contact with it, and it, in a way it reminds us of those simple truths.
So when you had before you a blank sheet of paper and 4 days of programming to fill, where did you start?
You know, the existing paradigm has been there's an ensemble in residence, and then they play the works of various composers. And I guess my feeling was that we really needed to be able to feature a series of composer performers and not make it only about an ensemble in residence, but actually make it about makers of music, doers of music, and much is made about this presumed distinction between composition and improvisation, but really what we're talking about is a distinction between ideas and action. Because what an improviser does is implements ideas in real time that are hopefully created in the moment and are maybe created in relation to other streams of music that may be happening. So, you know, a composer is usually seen as somebody who sculpts every musical moment long before it happens, kind of like the overlord, micromanager, god, king sort of thing, you know. And I have great love for the great composers and studied, you know, a lot of Western classical music and contemporary music. But I've also been involved in a lot of music that you can't really describe in those terms. And I wanted to make sure that they're just presented alongside each other. You know, there's basically what we consider to be composed music and music that might be instead created in the moment or maybe somewhere in between, you know, music that has an established structure that undergoes variations in the moment of performance, or that is subject to some creative process in the moment of performance. And all of that is valid music, you know, and even if we can't talk about it as a fixed object, that doesn't invalidate it. So that, I guess I wanted that to be part of the agenda, that we would really decenter composition as we know it.
Vijay Iyer is the music director for this year's Ojai Music Festival. This year's festival includes collaborations with trumpeter Wadada Leo Smith, the International Contemporary Ensemble, or ICE, violinist Jennifer Koh, drummer, composer, and conductor Tashan Sori, and a screening of the film Rade Rade, Rites of Holi, for which Vijay Iyer wrote the score, and that's paired with a performance of the chamber version of Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring. You can get all the details at ojaifestival.org. Listening to Arts Alive, I'm Brian Lauritsen. Still to come on today's program, the one concert where you are encouraged to keep your phone out and on. But first, Alan Chapman is back with the Around Town Arts Calendar.
Here's a bit of what's happening around town, starting as we always do with a free event, especially of interest to trombone fans. The UCLA Trombone Quartet, with graduate and undergraduate students from the UCLA Herb Alpert School of Music, is going to be performing Tuesday at the Studio City Branch Library. The tunes will range from the recognizable to the slightly more obscure, music from the classical canon to popular music and jazz. You can hear the UCLA Trombone Quartet by simply sliding over to the Studio City Branch Library Tuesday evening at 6:45, and again, admission is free. It's my pleasure to be co-hosting an event tonight, a celebration of American song featuring singers of the Los Angeles Master Chorale and LA Opera. It's a benefit concert for the Relief Fund of AGMA, the American Guild of Musical Artists, which represents the Master Chorale and opera singers and many other organizations across the country. That concert's tonight at 7:30 at the Oneonta Congregational Church. That's on Garfield Avenue in South Pasadena. You can find more information at musicalartists.org. This afternoon in Santa Barbara, folk songs and classical selections by Mendelssohn, Mozart, Schubert, and Lehar. It's a concert by the Edelweiss Choir of Santa Barbara. That's 3 o'clock this afternoon at Trinity Lutheran Church in Santa Barbara. You can get more information at their website. That's edelweisschoir.com. And lawyers and judges come together next Sunday for the LA Lawyers Phil and Legal Voices 8th Annual Concert Extraordinaire. They'll perform the Elgar Cello Concerto, Sibelius's Finlandia, and selections from Broadway musicals. And listen to this, they're honoring legendary entertainer Dick Van Dyke, and he'll be performing with the LA Lawyers Philharmonic. That's Sunday, June 11th at UCLA's Royce Hall, starting at 4 p.m. Tickets and details at lalawyersphil.org. And that's a bit of what's happening around town this week. For details on these and other cultural events in Southern California, visit performingartslive.com. For Arts Alive, I'm Alan Chapman.
Coming up on Arts Alive, we ask the Dean. But first, the Angel City Chorale calls themselves a multicultural ensemble that reflects the spirit of Los Angeles. It's the city's spirit of innovation that they're harnessing for this weekend's concerts. The chorale's artistic director, Sue Fink, told KUSC's Gail Eichenthal about a new mobile phone app called Yorkestra that Angel City audiences can download to become a part of the performance.
This is the one concert where we're going to tell you to leave your phone on, because your phone is going to be used as one of the props in the show. We're going to have music and sounds and lights and colors coming out of your phones during performances, and your phone becomes a magical part of the performance. Then we found this virtual reality artist who's incredible, Gary Villarreal, and he's going to come live. And as we sing this mass, he's going to be painting his artistic impressions with a virtual reality headset mask thing on. It'll be appearing up on the screens. And the mass we're going to perform has 6 movements. Instead of doing the mass of Mozart or the mass of, well, there's been thousands of composers who've written masses over the years, we've decided to do a mixed mass where the Kyrie comes from one composer and the Gloria comes from another composer. And so our mass will have the Kyrie from the Robert Ray's Gospel Mass, which is kind of R&B gospel. And we have some unbelievable gospel soloists in the group. We're going to do the Gloria from a South American mass, and then the Credo from Mozart, from his mass. And then we're going to do the Sanctus from Durifle and have an impressionistic kind of feel. And then the Benedictus from Schubert and the Agnus Dei from a modern jazz composer. So it's a really interesting mix of pieces. And then when the virtual reality artist is painting, you'll have such different atmospheres to create.
And then I think the audience gets to sing as well.
Right. A couple of opportunities. One is that we're going to be doing an R&B gospel combination that's also interactive, because we took an R&B version of Wade in the Water and a traditional one by Moses Hogan and combined them into a piece. And before we do that, we're going to teach the audience to sing a version of Wade in the Water with harmony, so people will get to see how you can take a simple song and present it in so many different ways.
So you have a lot of trust in this choir, most of whom are amateur singers.
Yeah. It's amazing how it's developed over the years. It started with 18 of my voice students 24 years ago. And I said, hey, do you want to be in a choir? I thought they were really good singers, but I didn't realize that choral skills don't necessarily come with good voices. But it developed over time, and pretty soon we had 64, and then we had 75, and we outgrew the space, and then we went to rehearsing at a church, and then we went rehearsing at a temple, and we kept growing and growing in our space, and so now we have 160 people. It's such a variety of people. We have classical singers, we have get down R&B singers, we have jazz singers, we have people who had careers, people that have sung backup for big artists. It's amazing, these people that, you know, that had other careers and now find the joy in singing in a group like this.
What does this tell you about the desire to sing in 21st century Los Angeles?
I think people are looking for community in a big city. There are many ways to find community. It's like, in a way, the new version of church, or like a sport where you're on a team and you're with other people and it's not just you by yourself. There's something special about choral singing, particularly. It's like when we bring our voices together and we feel this feeling that we're part of something that we're creating, sound that's coming out of our bodies, and that sound just fills the air. There's such a sense of power. It's love. I think choral singing is one of the best gifts that we have. I also like that we've been really trying to be a diverse choir, that we have people from all over the world, from, you know, different ethnicities and ages. We have people in their 20s and people in their 80s. And, you know, usually you make friends that are of your own socioeconomic level. And this way you're exposed to people whose lives you normally would have never come in contact with and learn to respect both the things we love about them and our differences. It's amazing. And it does keep you young for those of us who are older.
There is a YouTube sensation that the Angel City Chorale has been part of. Tell us about your millions of hits.
We always, you know, just put up on YouTube, like most groups, some of our performances. And we had done a performance of the song Africa, the Toto's Africa. And we did the hand motions and the sounds of rain. There was a drought in Africa, and the South African newspaper or a radio station or something picked it up, and it just spread across the world. And we've had over 5 million hits. And the comments that people write is that they really love the effects of the rain, and it's really, really cool. But more than that, they see that what's different about Angel City, and that is that there's a lot of joy, and there's, you can see the community, and you can see the diversity, and people are just completely drawn to this. They say, I want to be in this choir. I want to feel like these people feel. I want to just be. We have, for this concert, we have people who are actually flying in from around the world to see our concert because they've been so drawn in by this Africa video.
Why should people come to see Interactive?
I think they're going to see the wave of something new. I think they're going to get to see joy, hear creativity. They're going to hear wonderful music. But I think people will feel a part of something and part of what this feeling of community is all about.
Sue Fink is the founding artistic director and the conductor of the Angel City Chorale. She spoke with KUSC's Gail Eichenthal. You can be a part of the Chorale's interactive concerts today and tomorrow. Both concerts begin at 7 o'clock p.m. and take place at the Wilshire United Methodist Church. For tickets and more details, visit angelcitychorale.org. Now here once again is Gail Eichenthal with a question about creative problem solving for Dean Rob Curietta of the USC Thornton School of Music and Gloria Kaufman School of Dance.
Dean Rob, today's question comes from Rodney, who is interested in the creative process in a very general way. He realizes that you can't generalize about every single composer on the earth, but he wonders how a composer's creative process
might be applicable to other areas of life, inventing things or creative problem solving at any at anybody's occupation. Just an astounding question.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And I really like with this question that he specifically said composers, because so often people say, what about musicians? And it's a different thing if you're a performer. So let's really just focus on the composers. I went to Peter Webster, Dr. Peter Webster, who is a researcher in our music teaching and learning division and is considered really one of the foremost experts in researching creativity in musicians. It was fascinating talking with him. Yet it really comes down to so many things. They are transferable. Composing at one level is problem solving. I mean, you're presented with problems of the limitations of the range of the instruments, of the length of the piece, of harmony, all these different things that you have to work within, so you're solving problems to get your point across. It's also really a process of divergent thinking where the sky's the limit, and then bringing that back. Because some people are good at one and they can't bring it back to really convergent thinking, which brings it back all together. The composer has to do both, starting with a blank slate, going everywhere, but eventually having to bring it back to something concrete for whatever instruments they are absolutely writing for. So in this way, it really is a skill that could be moved to other areas, because that's a common skill. But all of these depend on having the skill and the technical ability in whatever field you're working in. So that's maybe a limitation. Yet to be a good composer and utilize these, you have to understand the basics, the instruments you're working for, harmonies, things like that. So to transfer it, let's say to finance, you might have to understand the same fundamental principles of whatever discipline, but then it's pretty transferable. And so it really does bring all of these things together.
One thinks about, was Beethoven a great accountant? I think not, from what his housekeepers tell us.
Yeah.
But not all composers are super organized, even though they may be geniuses. Schubert did scrawl some of his tunes on napkins.
Mm-hmm, right.
Beethoven did strike out dozens of versions of the Ode to Joy theme, mm-hmm, until he got to the one that worked. But this idea of divergent thinking and brainstorming is absolutely fascinating.
The other part of this that really comes into play is the idea of risk-taking within the creative process, but then the hard work to actually make it happen. A composer does that. You can brainstorm, you can do all these things, but without the discipline of actually bringing it to fruition, bringing it to closure until you create something, that's what makes a composer great. Well, that's what makes a composer, first of all. That's a skill for life right there, that it's so, so important to do that in every aspect of life.
I know at the USC Thornton School of Music, in order to be accepted as a composition major, you have to be extremely academically oriented. And I remember when I first found that out, I was quite intrigued by that.
Yeah. Well, with composers, when you hear so much about musicians are good in math, I really think it comes down to the composers who make that myth, because they are so, first of all, many are very good in math, but they're also, yes, academically extremely, extremely competent. Not that other musicians aren't, but it really is a unique breed there. One of our composition faculty members, actually, who's very well known, his undergraduate degree was in math. And so that's how close that tie-in is. So there is definitely some carryover there.
Organizational skills. Yeah,
absolutely.
And discipline,
yeah,
as you say.
Yeah, yeah. And the rest of the musicians, what they say, 3 out of 2 musicians are bad at math.
All right. Well, Rodney, thank you for the great question. And thank you, Dean Robb, for answering.
Thank you.
Do you have a question for Dean Robb Cudietta and his team of experts about music or about dance? If so, email your questions to askthedean@kusc.org. Once again, that's askthedean@kusc.org. And that wraps up this edition of Arts Alive for this Saturday, the 3rd of June. I hope you'll join us next week when we take a trip to the Autry Museum to see how toys, from dolls to video games, have shaped the American West. The technical director is Mark Hatwan. Kelsey McConnell is the executive producer. We had help this week from KUSC's Gail Eichenthal and Alan Chapman. Thanks also to Sheila Tepper. I'm Brian Lauritsen. Have a great weekend.